Hi, I'm Dan Barber from Blue Hill and Blue Hill at Stone Barns. You are listening to Food Fridays on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Many Jews will be preparing traditional dishes for the Hanukkah holiday, like latkes, kugel, and brisket. But one ingredient that used to be a staple of Jewish cooking is likely to be missing: schmaltz, rendered chicken or goose fat. Many people have come to disparage it, calling it heart attack food, and food writer Michael Ruhlman worries that it's in danger of being forgotten. He sings its praises in The Book of Schmaltz, Love Song to a Forgotten Fat, which includes more than 20 traditional and contemporary recipes. It's published by Little Brown, and I'm very pleased it has brought Mr. Ruhlman to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
How do you make schmaltz?
You make schmaltz by chopping up chicken skin and fat, and I start it in a little water to get it rendering, and then the water cooks off, and the fat renders out, and you're left with the crispy chicken skin, and midway through you add some onions, so it's got a sort of chickeny, roasted, oniony flavor.
And you can taste the difference when it's used in a dish?
Completely. It's got its own absolutely unique flavor, and it's one of those things you can't really get unless you make it yourself.
Although you can buy it in a commercial form, can't you?
You can buy it in a commercial form, but I found it doesn't have the depth of flavor that it does when you make it yourself.
Now, you focus only on chicken fat. There's also goose fat schmaltz. Is there a big difference in the taste there?
There's a little bit of a difference. Duck fat is another form of schmaltz that would have been used by Ashkenazi Jews who couldn't use lard and didn't have vegetable or olive oils. I love all those poultry fats.
I was wondering if you can make turkey schmaltz, but...
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I encourage it. It's a great way to use in your roux to make gravy. It adds a depth of flavor to your gravy. You can moisten your dressing with it.
Now, schmaltz, we think of as a Yiddish word, but it's really a German word, isn't it? And it's also applied to lard and rendered butter in German cookery. So has the Yiddish definition been the only one that's been used in this country?
As far as I know, it has been, yes. In German, it means fat, and that's what it was referred to. I believe, and this is conjecture, that... That the Jews who were in the entertainment industry in New York and Hollywood used the word schmaltz to refer to bad entertainment, bad theater, and bad movies that were overly sentimental, and they called it schmaltzy. And that became the word that we know. In fact, in my dictionary at home, that's the only definition of schmaltz. It doesn't say anything about rendered chicken fat.
A listener asks on our show page, is it safe to make schmaltz from chickens that have been raised with the current use of antibiotics?
Oh, that's a tricky question. You know, it's antibiotics are a huge issue, and we have to be careful of them. And if you are avoiding animal products that have been fed antibiotics, I would avoid that skin as well.
Although it probably is also being used in cows that are producing butter.
It's used all over. It's a big problem, and it's one we have to address.
Now, how do you use schmaltz? You can spread it on a piece of bread. Mm. It doesn't taste like butter.
It's better than butter. You put it on some toasted rye bread, smear it on with a little sprinkling of kosher salt, and it's absolutely heaven. But you can also cook in it. You can fry potatoes in it. Potatoes fried in it take on a crispness on the outside and a fluffy moistness on the inside that you just can't get from vegetable oil. And I don't know why, but it makes beautiful roasted or fried potatoes.
Well, how can you get enough skin and fat to make a decent amount of schmaltz?
A couple of ways. You can either I roast a chicken once a week at home for dinner, and I save the excess fat and skin that I can pull off. You can buy chicken thighs with the skin on and remove the skin and use that, and that will give you about a cup of schmaltz, and use the thighs for another dish, a braised dish of some sort. Or what I do when I need to make a lot of schmaltz is go to my farmer's market and ask one of the chicken purveyors, please save a couple of pounds of fat and skin for me, and they almost always have it.
Does it matter whether the chicken is kosher, which it means it's been salted, or it's a Purdue, or it's a free range?
It does. The skin behaves differently depending on the type of chicken it is, whether it's, my farmer's has a tougher skin. The Purdue stuff, you know, I've tried to avoid the mass-produced chickens. It's still going to give you decent schmaltz.
But it'll be yellower.
Yes, it will be.
How long does it last after you've made it?
It will last in the fridge for about 5 days to a week, and then its lovely ethereal flavors will start to wane. So if you're not going to use it for more than a week, I would freeze it, in which case it keeps for 6 months.
How did it get a reputation as heart attack food?
It's part of our whole country's misconception about fat generally. We've been taught that fat causes heart attacks, gives you heart disease.
Cholesterol.
Raises your blood cholesterol, and it will if you eat tons of fat. But we've been taught to fear fat. Fat is not bad. We need fat. But we've been, everything. Fat-free half and half. It drives me crazy. I asked a woman at the grocery store, why are you buying fat? Half and half is defined by its level of fat. What do you think they're putting in there to make up for the fat? And she says, I don't know. I just bought it because it was fat-free. We're afraid of fat.
Buttermilk is another example of that. I always thought fat-free buttermilk is an oxymoron.
It is indeed, and it's wrong. Fat used judiciously is one of the great parts of cooking and of life generally.
Well, because it gives a certain taste to food, what's it being replaced with these days?
Lord knows, I'm not replacing it with anything. I don't know how people do it. You can find other savory ingredients. Onions are a brilliant flavoring device to reduce fat. Mushrooms, of course. But nothing truly replaces fat. And we need fat in our diets to help us digest various essential nutrients. We need fat to live.
My guest is Michael Ruhlman, who is a James Beard Award-winning author of previous book called Romans 20, and now he's written the book of Schmaltz, Love Song to a Forgotten Fat. Where did you get your recipe for Schmaltz?
From my neighbor Lois Barron. I wrote a book on charcuterie, which was especially basically devoted to animal fat and salt, pig fat and salt. And given the country's fear of fat, I embraced fat, and I knew that there was this fat. I'm 100% goy. I'm from the WASP tradition, but I love fat. And when a neighbor...
But Ruhlman would be a German name?
Ruhlman is a German name. Yeah.
So Schmaltz would be a natural word for you to use.
Yes, I hope it was part of my ancestors' tradition at some point. A neighbor was leaving a party in the fall and said, the high holidays are upon us. I've got to go home and make Schmaltz. And I knew there was my Schmaltz muse. And I went to Lois and said, Lois, teach me about Schmaltz.
Where did you find the original recipes for these traditional Jewish foods? Had you encountered them before?
Not with schmaltz. Almost all Jewish recipe cookbooks say schmaltz or vegetable oil or just leave the schmaltz out altogether. I went to my two main sources besides Lois's family recipes, which I would make and then tweak. I put a little bit of red wine vinegar in the chopped liver because it's so rich. I think it needs that. And Lois called it, quote, abhorrent. So she didn't go with the vinegar and the chopped liver. But I tweaked that. Also, Joan Nathan and Arthur Schwartz's books I absolutely adore, and they were also my guides.
And Arthur Schwartz, by the way, also does a lot of Italian cookbooks, which is kind of interesting, a totally different cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like kasha. Now,
How did you know that?
Well, you say it in the book. I love kasha, by the way.
Do you really?
Yeah, I think it's just... Oh, I delicious think if cooked correctly.
Oh, maybe I just haven't cooked
mushrooms
it correctly.
Mushrooms and onions. Oh, it's delicious.
Really?
Probably with schmaltz, although I haven't made it with schmaltz. But you have a recipe for knishes, and you really don't like the kasha knish?
I find kasha nasty, nasty stuff. In fact, so does Lois's husband, Russell. He will leave the house when she makes kasha. It's that bad.
On the other hand, Jack has written us on Facebook, and he says kasha vanishkas and chopped liver are just not the same without schmaltz.
I would agree with that. I think I'll have to give kasha. I've gotten enough pushback on the kasha issue that I'm going to have to give it another go.
You may just not have had it prepared correctly.
I think so.
But making knishes is really difficult. Very few people make them at home.
It is a little labor intensive. You've got to make a dough, and it's got to be a very, very thin dough, and then you've got to make the filling. But again, I love it because I had a history of – I spent my youth in New York City, my young adulthood, and I would get knishes on the street, and I loved them. They were a great meal on the way to work. And so I felt honor-bound to give knishes a role and had Lois come over and help me make them and show me how thin the dough was.
Now, you have a whole bunch of different recipes here. Did the schmaltz not work with some of the ones you tried out?
Schmaltz worked great in almost all cases, even in some surprising ones. For, you know, I make a chicken sausage in here, and I didn't think that the schmaltz would stay emulsified in the meat, but if you freeze the schmaltz, you can whip it in, and you can have a basically kosher sausage.
You wrote that cholent was the dish that you feared the most and then became most excited by.
Well, yeah. Every time I mentioned cholent, Lois just groaned at memories of past cholents. And so I wanted to make a really good cholent. And I realized how similar it was to the great Gascon stew, cassoulet. And I wanted to make a cholent that adhered to Jewish tradition, but was every bit as good as a cassoulet.
Arthur Schwartz writes that cholent is only one of three truly Jewish dishes.
That's right.
Because all the other dishes really are just variations on the foods of the countries that the Jews were living in.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
As we pointed out, you're not Jewish. Is schmaltz what got you interested in Jewish food?
It is, absolutely. I became fascinated with the history of – I've always been fascinated by the culture of the Jews and the tribulations of the Jews. And their history. And what fascinated me was that this is a culinary culture born of poverty, of continual migration. And that fascinated me.
Are some of the older traditions still maintained in the more insulated communities, like the Hasidic communities?
They have to be. I'm sure they are. You've got great communities here in New York City. And there's a huge Eastern European Jewish population in Cleveland. And so, yes, it's very much alive, and I hope to bring schmaltz back into that tradition where it belongs.
Now, you have recipes here, but my research indicates, you recently said in an interview with the Chicago Reader that you hate recipes.
I do. I don't hate them. I hate people's reliance on them. I think that
one tablespoon plus a half a teaspoon.
Yes. It's impossible to write a recipe that is foolproof because all the environments are variable. You have to use your common sense. You have to think about it. And recipes encourage people not to think about what's happening to the food. And so that's why I don't like recipes.
And you also, as you pointed out, have become a pro-fat proselytizer. That's what you describe yourself.
I am very much so. We shouldn't fear fat. Fat doesn't make us fat. Eating too much makes us fat. Fat doesn't give us heart attacks. Eating too much of it and combine that with smoking and stress, and that's what gives us heart attacks. It's not fat alone.
We do need fat in our diet.
We do. We do. There's a reason for fat in our diet.
What were some of the reactions when you told people that you were writing a book about schmaltz?
It was either what is schmaltz? Or, really?
And then were any of them surprised that you're not Jewish?
In fact, the Jewish News in Cleveland sent a reporter over to do a story on me as Jew of the Week and was terrified to learn that he had a copy due in a half hour and that I was not a Jew. So, yes, some people have been surprised.
Meanwhile, you are a goy who makes kishka and kreplach.
Oh, they're so good. But also one of the things that I'm proud of is I took schmaltz and I made it into some contemporary recipes like the Parisian gnocchi. Instead of butter, we use schmaltz. And then you boil these dumplings, or basically really light, fluffy dumplings, and then you saute them and brown them in schmaltz. And they're absolutely exquisite, especially with some spinach and a poached egg on top.
And you also put schmaltz in matzo ball soup.
Matzo ball soup.
And consomme in general.
Well, I wouldn't put it in the consomme. I would put it in the matzo ball if I was going to make a very four-star elegant matzo ball soup, which I have in the book.
And chicken with schmaltz dumplings. These are all more contemporary recipes, I guess.
Mm-hmm. A brioche. I've got a schmaltz brioche in there, which is absolutely out of this world. Great crust and lovely crumb, beautiful for savory dishes.
Michael Ruhlman's latest book is The Book of Schmaltz, Love Song to a Forgotten Fat. It is published by Little Brown. And we have the recipe for potato kugel on our show page at WNYC.org. Just one more thing. A listener says that the chicken fat-based schmaltz is the equivalent to chitlins in this country.
The gribbenas, the cracklins that result from the schmaltz-making process. Yes, absolutely correct. And they're so good.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.